sea recortado.
All right.
That's Spanish, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, hello, and welcome to Coast to Coast Crime. We are back for episode 4.
Hello again.
That is Hunter. I am Alex. We are excited to be here.
Why couldn't I be Alex and you be Hunter this time?
I mean, that's fine. Okay, so this is Hunter and that's Alex. He's looking beautiful today.
So nice in this summer heat and glowing.
Yeah, I know. It's only a matter of time before I think we're going to just like melt into the floor. So I will try to not rush through this, but also move it at proper pace.
Are we going somewhere tropical today?
No.
East Coast.
Still Northeast.
Maryland?
No.
No.
Maryland is below the Mason-Dixon line. Northeast. Boston, that area.
Massachusetts.
We're going to Massachusetts. And also, somebody's going to listen to this and be like, did you just say that? Boston? That's going to be a problem.
It's okay. They're proud of their accent. I like it. It's aggressive. It's fun.
I mean, it's pretty rad. I actually really enjoyed it when I went to Boston the handful of times I've been there. Okay, so Massachusetts is our state for today. And holy shit, guys. Like, the amount of crimes that came up, I was like, I wonder what's happened in Massachusetts. Why do you look so puzzled?
Oh, you just, I don't know. It's just funny. You're like, oh, shit ton of crime in Massachusetts.
But I was like, really, I don't know what I was expecting, but there was like a local TV station that did like it's like WCVB or whatever. And it's like all the top crimes that happened in Massachusetts. And it was a slideshow of like 91 slides. And every time I was like, I could do that one. Oh, God, that's bad. I could do that one. Oh, my God, that's even worse. And it just got worse. So
where in that line did you pick in what worse order?
Mega, uber, ultra fucked up.
Great.
Yeah. You know, I mean, go big or go home.
We got to stop doing this before bed so I stop having nightmares.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, on that note, there's another warning, obviously, that goes with all of these. But this one actually involves some children. So I wish you guys could see his face right now. It's really not good. Look, all of them are messed up. And weirdly, there were a handful of them that involved kids as well, which is like, what is going on?
Body dismemberment.
Oh, my God. You got to keep bringing up the freaking torsos.
Rape and unsolved murder.
Oh, my God.
And now children.
Listen, nobody ever said this was going to be pretty.
You got a swell of a progressive slope there.
Well, I almost went with the bank robbery, but
why go there? Just put the gas on the pedal to the metal.
Gas on the fire? I don't even know.
Either one.
Anyway, so without further ado, I'm sorry. These are the murders of Mary Ann Polly Seguin and her two children, Daniel and Amy. So
three.
There are three people. There are two sweet baby angels because, well, you'll see.
Great. Let's just jump in.
I have a bunch of sources. There were so many articles in this, but I got stuff from the Astro Data Bank, which kind of looks like Wikipedia, also Wikipedia. Mass.gov was their actual parole board document. UPI.com article, no clue who the author was. And there was an excerpt from this book called Heartless, The True Story of Neil Entwistle or whatever. And it's basically he murdered his wife and the kids as well. And that is another one that was almost a contender. It's really jacked up.
You didn't get anything from the Murderpedia this time?
I did not this time. I know. Don't be sad. I know that's your new favorite website. Lastly, actually, there's two. So there's an excerpt from a book called Murder on Trial from 1620 to 2002. And that was edited by Robert Asher, Lawrence B. Goodhart, and Alan Rogers. And last but not least, MassLive.com. It was an article by Scott Crotu, which I probably butchered that name. But anyway, let's do it. So the story takes place in Holliston, Massachusetts, and in the adjacent town of Hopkinton, which I can never say.
Holliston, but you just did.
My brain just had a little bit of a fart. I was like, okay, it's not happening. Holliston is a town in Middlesex County in the greater Boston area. While this is a crime podcast, though, there were some fun facts that popped up about Holliston. So I thought, why the hell not? I'll just throw them in.
Let's hear some fun facts.
You know, before shit gets real dark. Mm-hmm. So the town was once the largest producer of shoes in the United States.
Shiz.
Shiz. So were they like the sole manufacturer? Stupid dad jokes.
All right.
Okay.
I applaud that one. Very nice. Sorry,
just, you know, going in there. Hollison's Mudville neighborhood claims to be the location of the 1888 Ernest Lawrence Thayer poem called Casey at the Bat. Have you heard about the poem? It's about baseball.
No.
Okay. I almost put it in here and I was like, nobody's going to want to hear me recite poetry, especially not about baseball. But anyway, there's a fight between it being in Hollison's Mudville or Stockton's Mudville, who actually has like the rights of like, which Mudville was it? And it's still apparently a feud, even though the thing came out in 1888.
No way.
Yeah. Random crap. And last but not least, they have a thing called the Legend of Balancing Rock. Really weird, but it's a gigantic boulder balancing on another boulder. And it kind of makes like the Pac-Man mouth look.
Oh, sweet.
But it looks like it should teeter-totter over. And actually, back in 1789, George Washington led his entourage from Boston to New York via that trail. And apparently, allegedly, they all took a little bit of a break to have fun and use the opportunity to see if they could push the rock over like so many people do or have done over time. And even George Washington like gave it a go. And of course, they didn't budge.
Mighty George couldn't handle it?
Yeah.
But he chopped down the cherry tree. Well, or the apple. Oh, no.
Oh, God. Well,
one of the trees,
now
right?
Now is the time for me to tell everybody that I'm not the best at history. So,
well,
whatever you said, babe, is probably correct.
Okay. I think he lied about it or he told the truth. It was one of those.
Is it Honest Abe? I've got nothing.
Honest Abe, maybe. Ugh,
oh, whatever. God.
Okay, let's just move
on. Okay, sorry, people. You didn't tune in for this. So now on to the bad part. Sorry. The Seguins. Pronunciation? Yes, I think that's correct. Seguin, like penguin. So the Seguins were a young married couple that seemed to have it all. Kenneth, the husband, was 35 years old and a software executive. His wife, Marianne, who was known as Polly, was 34 years old, active in the community, and enjoyed selling Tupperware and Mary Kay products. I remember those days. They had two beautiful children, Daniel, age 7, and Amy, age 5. In April of 1992, the family had just purchased a new home in Holliston, and everything appeared to be on the up and up. On the morning, I know whenever that happens, it's never good. On the morning of April 29th, 1 week after moving into their brand new home, Kenneth was found wandering inside the Hopkinton State Forest, and he had suffered blood loss from what were determined to later be superficial cuts, but they were on his left wrist, his left ankle, his left temple, and the right side of his neck. And when the police asked him what happened, he said that two unidentified men broke into his house the night before. He said these two men then beat him up and just left him there. And then they whacked, quote unquote, his words, whacked his wife in the head with an axe while she was sleeping next to him. And then he said that the two men forced his children to take sleeping pills.
And they only attacked him on the left side because
primarily
his left leg, his wrist, and his left temple.
Yeah, and like a little bit of a scratch on his right side. Sounds like somebody who might be right-handed inflicted. I'm just, you know, foreshadowing.
Ah.
So officers immediately start to realize that the children might be in danger. So they start a search of the area right away. And at their home, the police find the house to be completely empty. And while investigating, they discover a blood-soaked mattress that had actually been flipped over with a quilt pulled up in an attempt to hide a really large blood stain. So the officers can now corroborate that Polly was, in fact, murdered in her own bed, kind of how he had said, because it was just that much blood. So police found the family car parked off of Route 85, as if I know where that is, around 1 mile from where Kenneth was found. The car contained bloodstained clothes that they believe belonged to Kenneth, and they were discovered in a trash bin that wasn't far from the car, police said. And in the same trash bin, they found an empty bag of lye, which is a chemical that they sometimes use to speed up decomposition of bodies.
Yes.
So
that's one thing I remember from all your serial killer talk.
Who, me? Never.
Yeah.
So
scared if I see a bag of lye go in the garage one day.
Oh, boy. A short time later, Polly's body, clothed in only a nightshirt, was discovered floating in the Sudbury River in Southborough. She had a large gaping wound on her left temple. Her autopsy would reveal that the cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head, which was apparent. Police brought in specially trained dogs to search Hopkinton State Park. They also had divers search the nearby bodies of water looking for Daniel and Amy. All the while, they were praying and holding out hope that they might be found alive. But on May 2nd, 1992, after days of searching into the despair of law enforcement, the bodies of Daniel and Amy were found in Beaver Pond in Franklin. So,
were they like, how long was this from the moment the report happened?
They went missing on the 29th, so it was May 2nd, so for a few days.
Okay.
So, the description of their wounds are pretty graphic, but I think it's something to put in here because it leads to just understanding how fucked up the situation is. So Danny's body was submerged under the water, and piled on top of him were sticks, mud, and debris intended to hold his body under and keep him concealed. His throat had been cut so severely that he was almost decapitated. This is a child.
Jesus.
Amy's body was found not too far from her brother's. She, too, had sticks, mud, and debris piled on top of her. Her head had also been pushed into the muck at the bottom of the pond. Only her sneakers were visible. Both of her wrists were slashed almost completely through. So it's
wow.
Really heavy-duty stuff.
So it wasn't sleeping pills.
No. So Joe Flaherty, I think is how you say his last name, he was one of the investigators that was actually assigned to the case and was there the day that the bodies were recovered. And, you know, he said, quote, "I'll never forget it. We pulled those bodies out of the pond, and when we saw them, all you could hear is this sigh, this massive sigh. The sight was shocking. Even on the autopsy table, the kids looked like angels," end quote.
Ugh.
So, you know, and I read further into it. I didn't include it, but he basically said, like, it just rocked his world. And how could it not? So while the bodies of his family members were being discovered, Kenneth was actually being evaluated and questioned about the events of that evening. His lawyer, Thomas Giblin, spoke about Kenneth and his mental state at the time. He said, quote, "His memory is very poor right now. He is quite honestly in a state of shock. Kill me. He hasn't been able to say much about anything right now," end quote. Just playing up that card of just being like so dazed and confused. Like, I don't know what happened. I'm a victim.
That sounded like quite an opinionated statement there, Hunter.
I said it. Yeah. Hunter, God, get it together.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just saying, I think it sounds like bullshit, but that's just me. So I even wrote in my notes, "Are you kidding me?" But I digress. I'll let you all make up your own minds because you're all adults, hopefully. And if your children, turn this off right now.
Yeah.
So Kenneth initially denied killing his wife. But once the children were found and all of the pieces were starting to fall into place, the investigators determined that Kenneth was absolutely responsible for the brutal murder of his family. Like, it was basically cut and dry.
Absolutely.
Wrong verbiage. They found out he had crushed up over-the-counter sleeping pills and mixed them into Daniel and Amy's juice boxes. So there really were sleeping pills involved. But once they were unconscious, he then drove them out to the pond, murdered them, probably in the car, and then dumped their bodies. But it's like, how the hell can you do that to your own children?
Yeah. Like, it's, here's the perfect language. What the fuck?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Your wife and your kids?
Your wife and your kids. And it's like, not, there's no justification in either direction, but it's like, you hear these stories about people who kill their children, but I mean, like, this is just the brutality of it. It's just awful. Like, I honestly, as I was reading this, I was speechless. So after he does that to his children, this sick-song bitch, he then went home and laid in bed with Polly for a couple of hours before he just basically, like, cuddled up with her and then randomly bludgeoned her with an axe. Just was like, that was a fun few hours. Let me just snuggle up to you. I just killed our kids, and now I'm going to kill you.
Like, oh, wasn't satisfied. Got to get one more.
Yeah, I don't know. Either that or he was – when I was reading it, it made me feel like he was almost, in a weird way, like, saying his goodbye because he knew what he was going to do. That's also just me speculating, but that's kind of what I interpreted.
Yeah.
So after he bludgeoned her with an axe, he took her then to the lake and also dumped her body as well. Then he went home, he disposed of the bloody sheets, and he flipped over the mattress. The next day, Kenneth calls the children's school to let them know that they won't be in. They were out sick. Mm-hmm. He then inflicted the wounds upon himself and wandered out into Hopkinton State Park. He claimed that he hurt himself in hopes of committing suicide to be with his family, but the police basically called bullshit. They were all superficial wounds, and it just seemed like he just did it to be like, oh, woe is me as well.
hence why all the wounds are on the left side of his body.
Mm-hmm. Look at you.
I listen from time to time.
I don't. So when questioned further, Kenneth stated that he was in denial about killing his family. So he made up the story of the intruders. As the digging continued, the truth about the Seguins' life behind the closed doors started to surface. The family was living above their means, and moving into their brand new $220,000 house put a strain on them financially. In addition to the financial trouble uncovered, they found out that Polly had told Kenneth that she was going to leave him. He admitted to being on Prozac during that time that he committed the crimes, and he said that he had had thoughts throughout 1992 of committing suicide. Kenneth then explained that his depression had first started in college at age 20 when he was diagnosed with testicular cancer, which I will not, that's terrible. I mean, yeah. 20, you're a kid.
Yeah.
He also took it very hard when his father-in-law died. He initially sought help for his depression, but then stopped abruptly and never went back. In 1992, his depression came back full force due to his issues with his marriage, and he just snapped. Kenneth began bouncing checks and having arguments with Polly. She wanted to have more children, but he did not, and it was a huge point of contention among some of the others. He felt like he was losing control of his family, which added to the laundry list of failures and shortcomings that he believed he had. He decided the only way out was to murder his family and kill himself, and his quote is, quote, to take his family to a better and safer place, heaven, end quote.
Why couldn't he just kill himself and leave his family there?
Apparently, he thought that he'd be leaving them in a bad position. I mean, obviously, it's just an excuse. It doesn't.
Bro, plan it out for 6 months. Get a life insurance policy. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't play out. Like, obviously, it's a cop out to me. But
yeah,
that's just my opinion. I shouldn't be opinionated, but I have one, and that's where I am.
Fuck it, go with it. So,
you know. At his trial, Kenneth pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, don't they always? No, go ahead. Just, I get it. Yeah.
Keep going.
Yep. Not guilty by reason of insanity. The psychiatrists that were called by his defense argued that he was not criminally responsible and that his, quote, mental illness made it impossible for him to conform his conduct to the requirement of law, end quote. Really? So they also argued that the side effects of Prozac led him to manifesting some very dangerous ideas. And however, this prosecution psychiatrist testified that Kenneth was able to appreciate the wrongfulness of his actions, and she formed the opinion that he had the capacity to control his conduct. The courtroom was very divided on if he was sane or not during the commission of the murders. And I won't say anything because, look, I've suffered from depression too, so but that didn't make me go out and murder anybody, but who knows?
Yeah.
Medication is crazy. You know, it is what it is, but
does Prozac really have that potency to it?
I mean, I'm sure that there are probably medical, like, weird cases where it's like 90% of the time it's fine. And then there's those weird, you know, side effects.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was never on it, but I mean, I've known people who have taken it, and that's just, it's not to say that it couldn't happen because I'm obviously not a doctor, but it just sounded like they were grasping at straws to figure out what would have made somebody do something so horrendous.
Yeah.
It's almost like you want it to be the Prozac.
Jeez.
Yeah. So on February 4th, 1993, after 6 days of deliberation, the jury came back with a verdict. Kenneth Seguin was convicted of 3 counts of murder in the second degree. The jury concluded that his psychosis undercut his ability to premeditate the murders of his wife and his children, but he was not insane. So they basically said, you had some issues. However, you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, you're aware of what was going on.
He was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole for the murder of his wife, followed by 2 concurrent life sentences with the possibility of parole for the murder of his children. He attempted an appeal in 1996, but the convictions were upheld. On March 21st of 2017, Kenneth, now at that time age 59, was up in front of the parole board again. He was denied parole after his initial hearing in 2007 and also at his review hearing in 2012. Shocker. He expressed his regret and pain over slaying his family and accepted responsibility for what he did. The board heard oral testimonies from his brother, sister, friend, and former employee, all in favor of his parole. However, the board also heard and considered testimony of Polly's two sisters, a Holliston police chief, a Holliston police detective, and a Middlesex district attorney named Kevin Curtin, all opposing his release. The board also received numerous letters of opposition from the Holliston Police Department and Middlesex district attorney Adrian Lynch. Which, I mean, how could you not? After reviewing all of the testimonies, the board made their decision. So I'll read from their actual official parole board document, because that just sums it up. So they said, quote, "The board is of the opinion that Kenneth Seguin has not demonstrated a level of rehabilitative progress that would make his release compatible with the welfare of society," end quote. And then they also state, quote, "The board also believes that Mr. Seguin lacks empathy and insight into a horrendous crime which resulted in the brutal murder of his wife and his two children," end quote. So, no empathy. The board decided unanimously that he was not rehabilitated and therefore not granted parole. His next appearance before the board will be in 2022, and he is still in prison in Massachusetts, as far as I know, right now, waiting for that next parole hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not as long as some of the other ones, but pretty brutal. And yeah, so those are the murders of Marianne Polly Seguin and her two children, Daniel and Amy. So let's all go and have a drink or take a walk and shake that one off, because that was a little heavy. And if you don't drink, maybe a nice cup of tea, that would work. But yeah, it's a little dark.
Yeah, obviously, we don't know what's going through that person's brain, but I don't know. If you're struggling, I suggest you don't take other people's lives.
Yeah.
I'd prefer you don't take yourselves.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, and I know, you know, obviously, like, there's always a fine line, like, with when it comes to mental illness, because it's like, we don't know what's going on in anybody's head, or I mean, hell, sometimes, you know, we don't know what's going on in our own heads, but it's just when you look at it from a step back and you're like, man, dude, I'm seeing that on paper. Like, there should have been something else. Like, he did try to seek help back in the day, but then he just gave up on it. So yeah, but it's just a bummer all around. But I saw that case and I was like, oh God. Okay. And initially I saw it cause it was on April 28th and I was just searching through things and it caught my eye. So yes, I apologize to everybody. I think everybody's gonna have to shake it off. Do you have anything lighthearted that you'd like to add to the end of this, babe? That's not as awful.
I saw a dolphin today.
Okay.
Is that
yeah, right? I'll take a dolphin over murder. Let's do this.
Well, I hope I see dolphins in my dreams tonight.
I mean, I really hope you do as well. Well, everyone, sorry for such the bummer. I don't know if murder's ever not a bummer.
We're educating.
I think it's always a bummer. But yeah, that was the case for this week. Next week, we are going to go to New York. Oh, yeah.
New York.
I was waiting for that.
The city of brotherly apples.
Mm-hmm. And that never sleeps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
New York the city? Yeah, New York's the city that never sleeps.
I mean, I barely slept when I was there, so I don't know. I mean, if it's
wow,
it's true to its name. Hey, you know what? You just got to dance all night. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much. And we are going to go to New York next week. So if you have any suggestions, let me know. You can always email us at coast2coastcrime@gmail.com. We have all the social media platforms, all that jazz. I know I sound like a broken record each week. But yeah, if you have any suggestions, comments, criticism, love, send it to us. We are here and ready to receive it.
Yes, yes. So thank you. Thank you all.
All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 4, and we will see you next time.
Sweet dreams.
Oh, God. Bye. Bye.